This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And I'm having a drink, and I smoked some pot. It's this dingy bar. It was like that Talking Heads song, "Well, how did you get here?" Many days go by, and I'm like, God damn, this is ridiculous. What do you want from your life? Is this where you're going to be in 20 years? Get the hell out of here, and let's go figure this out.
Hey, now it's cracking. Welcome to the Jim Rohn Podcast, episode number 223, where today we welcome another legend of his game to the original Side Hustle, a polarizing figure who is still very much on top of that game, and his game is poker. Actually, a lot more than just poker, but we are going to talk to the icon, the poker brat himself, because our guest is Hall of Famer Phil Hellmuth. Now, if you know anything at all about poker, you know all about Phil. And if you don't, just know this. Nobody has ever won more where it matters most in Vegas at the World Series of Poker. Phil has been an absolute ace at that table since he broke through with a main event win all the way back in 1989. He has racked up a record 16 World Series bracelets since then, and along the way, he earned a reputation as the bad boy of poker for his famous outbursts. But is it really fair? Is he really that guy? Listen to this conversation and make up your mind for yourself. I say this all the time. We don't really know any of these people, and you may not know Phil. So let's get right to it. It's episode 223 with poker legend Phil Hellmuth, and it starts right now. So Phil, hard to imagine, but you and I are the same age. We've been at our respective crafts for pretty much the same amount of time, yet we have never spoken before. Sort of crazy to me, but better late than never. Great to have you on this podcast. How are you? How are things?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was trying to think, did I do the Jim Rohn show in like 05 or 07? And there was some talk of it. And you're right. Yeah, I mean, I'm a professional poker player. I won the main event in 1989. So I'm surprised I haven't been on your show yet. But here we go.
Here we go. It's an amazing thing, really. Now, I will tell you this. That's not to say that I'm not really interested in you. In fact, I find you to be a really interesting guy. But what might be most interesting of all to me is that you're a native of Madison, Wisconsin. I say so because our oldest son is a senior at the University of Wisconsin. And although I'm an LA native, we love Wisconsin so much, we built a house in Eagle River. So I've got to know, what was it like to grow up in Madtown?
You built a place in Eagle River. Okay, that's very cool. So my grandfather was this famous heart surgeon. He won like heart surgeon of this global award. And so he built a house in Minocqua, Wisconsin,
yes,
which is pretty close to where you are.
Yes, yeah, it is.
Eagle River.
Right.
And then, I went to the University of Wisconsin. And I grew up in Madison. And I mean, what a great place to grow up. It's beautiful there. You know, your son's there. It's very mellow there, too, and, I loved it there.
All right, so, Phil, for those who do not understand, one of the reasons I suggested that he go there, like my son had it in his head, I'm going to go to NYU. I've told the story before, Phil, but I said, listen, the city will always be there. You're going to have your entire life to live and work in a city, find a college town. And by the way, everybody I've ever met that went to Wisconsin loved Wisconsin. I've never met one single person that didn't think it was the best thing ever. You went for 3 years, but can you help me explain what it is about that school that makes it so unique and why people love it so much?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Madison, and you know, football Saturdays are a huge deal there. And if you're a student, you're gonna have a few drinks, even though the games are relatively early. And it's amazing how the place just seems to sell out, whether the Badgers are good or bad. There's a real community surrounding Wisconsin athletics and the basketball team. And the basketball team made a few Final Fours, and the football team's been ranked in the top 10. So, from an athletic point of view, but it's just so beautiful. you're surrounded by two lakes, Lake Monona and Lake Mendota. And it's just like an amazing college atmosphere. What, there's 30, 40,000 students. So there's just tons of activities. My friends played ultimate frisbee. There's a super fun, kind of like intramural system there where people can play games. And if you're interested in anything, there's a club for it there. And so, you know, and I don't know, it's just such a beautiful place. And, State Street, and it's world famous for Halloween. I mean, you know, people from all over the world go to Madison, Wisconsin for Halloween. And and people just go there for football weekends. And I don't know, it's hard to explain the kind of atmosphere that surrounds the place, but it's a thing.
Exactly right. It is a thing. That's why I asked you, because I try to explain it to people outside, and it's kind of hard to explain unless you're within. But I think you did a really good job of it. Now, all of that said, you went to the school for 3 years before you left to play poker full time. I'm curious, what did your father, who was a dean at the university, think about that decision at that time?
Well, it's worse than that. See, let's talk about letters for a second.
Please.
My dad has an M. Let's talk about letters. My dad has an MBA, a PhD, and a JD. So I don't know anybody with that many letters. And then I have letters myself, ADD. But now I guess it's ADHD. So I have my own letters. To me, it was really hard. And I was just talking about this yesterday. And in my autobiography, I talk about this. I remember going to the library my junior year and reading this dry economics book. And I read the first page, and then 20 minutes later it passed and I was on the third page. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't retain anything. So I'd start over, and it was really brutal. You know, that was probably ADD at its worst. Now it's a huge advantage to me now in life, and probably from the time I was in my 20s. But it does hurt your ability to do well school-wise there. And so my dad, with all those letters, a dean at a university, you know, whose father was a heart surgeon, you know, I mean, and I'm the oldest of five. He was ready to kill me when I dropped out of school to play poker. And we're talking about the 1980s, where poker was akin to drug dealing in his eyes. And, when I was 24 years old in 1989, he finally realized, wow, he's doing well at this profession. And my dad went to the world championships that year. I told him I was going to win it. And then I did win it. And I was against another legend. Johnny Chan had won it in 87 and 88. And now we faced off heads up in 89. It was a pretty cool moment to have my dad there. And it was 750,000. Imagine what that is today. That's like 10 million for first. And kind of like, my dad never bothered me again. And then I married an MD. So he's okay on the education front. He's okay on the success front. And it's been a really nice, great ride for me in poker.
Hey, listen, there have been some serious letters that are flying around there, right? PhD,
letters,
MBA,
you have any letters,
MD.
Jim?
No, I've got a BS, BA,
right.
BS, you know, definitely BS. Oh, yeah. I love that sound so much. That sound really does make me smile, because it is the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources that were once reserved for big business. So upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. And I love how Shopify has the tools and the resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. What I'm saying is, Shopify powers over millions of businesses from first sale to full scale. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. What you want to do is go to shopify.com/Rome, all lowercase, and get a free 14-day trial and find out for yourself. Get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/ROME right now. Shopify.com/Rome. But Phil, I mean, like, you skipped ahead of the world championship when you beat Johnny Chan and you were 24. However, when you first left, I'm curious, like, what was your bankroll? How much money had you saved? And what was that first year away from home like?
Well, I mean, so I did it in trips, and I'm really proud of my autobiography. Poker Brat talks about this, and people that read Poker Brat, all of a sudden they like me. So let's be clear, you know, my nickname's Poker Brat, and a lot of people in the world didn't like me, and I didn't like that. I said, why do they have to make me into the bad boy? Because I'm a little mouthy at the table, but I'm the guy that's never cheated on his wife. I'm the guy that's not a drug addict. I'm the guy that's not an alcoholic. I'm the guy that's a family man. Why do I have to be the bad boy of poker? Just because I bark at the table a lot, you know, and I guess that's memorable. And, you know, so when I went to Las Vegas, the first 12 times I was playing in really good games. And it works like this, Jim. Imagine every hometown has poker games. And then if you're good in the hometown games, you find games in your state. So there are games in Madison. There are games in La Crosse. Then the bigger game was in Minneapolis, which was a four-hour drive. And so I was playing in the Milwaukee. There were games. I was playing in those games, and I just started crushing everybody. And pretty soon I had $25,000 in the bank. And then I was just turned 21. And then I started going to Vegas, and I started losing every trip. Because as much as there's an ecosystem for poker in the cities and states, Vegas is the top of the mountain. And so if you imagine a mountain in front of you, a pyramid, all the money goes up. It starts at the smaller limits, goes to the medium limits, goes to the higher limits, goes to the high limits. All the money flows up. I realized right away if I wanted to be successful in poker, I'd have to be at the top of the pyramid where all the money came. And so, you know, so for me, I started with no money, and I made 12 trips to Vegas where I just lost every trip. And then all of a sudden, on like the 13th trip, I won. And I've been winning ever since.
See, now, Phil, like, you figured out the process, but was there not a period of time, though, when you had to come home, when you had to kind of rebuild yourself and your bankroll and then go to work and then hit the farm? Was there never that point in your life?
Oh, yeah. Well, I went broke when I was in the feeder games in Madison. So I was playing the feeder games, and, I mean, I was a student. I was a junior, I guess I never officially became a senior, but I was like a junior in college, and I had a $500 bankroll, and I lost it. And I ended up working for Blaine Farms for a few months. And I remember getting up and getting on, you know, I'd ride with some of the guys in the neighborhood. And then we'd go to this school bus at 7 a.m. And they'd have us work for, you know, 4 hours or 8 hours, depending on the day. And then the school bus would drop us off, and we'd get rides back to our place. And then for me, I did that for about a month and a half, I guess. I don't think 2 months. And I started realizing the value of a dollar. And I'm like, well, and I started getting back into poker once I could pay off the $100 I owed. And then all of a sudden, the game became easier for me. Things made sense, and I started winning right away. So probably by the time I was 21. I mean, it doesn't mean that you don't, like, I've been very lucky not to have been broke much in my life, but it doesn't mean there's times you're shorter and you're struggling. I mean, I had a $200,000 penthouse condominium in Madison, Wisconsin, and my wife was in medical school, and we had a son at the time. And so I'm living this amazing place. I have a Porsche and a Cadillac, and I'd paid all my taxes. But I just remember my bank account was like $3,000 for a long time. So it was kind of incongruous to my net worth, you know, because I could go out and probably borrow a lot of money on that condo. Everything was paid for. So when it came to going broke, I did a very good job of managing my money from day one. But I mean, it's never straight up in poker.
Let's talk investing for a minute and how confusing things can get when people start throwing around terms like altcoin, shilling, meme stocks, and the like. with all that jargon flying around, it can be hard to figure out how to start investing. So whether you're eager to get started with investing or you already know the ropes and you want to diversify your portfolio, SoFi has your back. Let me tell you what I like about SoFi. No commissions on trading stocks and ETFs. No account fees or hidden fees either. You can use fractional shares that start as low as $5 to buy brand name stocks even if you don't have a couple of grand lying around. And complimentary financial planners are ready to help you out with any questions, whether you're stuck on where to start or you need help deciding on what to do next. So what you should do is get hands-on with active investing or let SoFi's number one ranked automated investing tool take the stress out of building and managing a diversified portfolio by doing it for you. And then on top of that, you can explore the world of cryptocurrency right alongside the rest of your investments. 30 available coins include Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, and more. So cut through the jargon and make investing easier with SoFi. Visit SoFi.com/Rome and learn how you can win up to $1,000 in stock when you open up an account. That's SoFi.com/Rome. Brokerage and active investing products offered through SoFi Securities, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. All investments involve risk, including the loss of principal. Past performance does not guarantee future results or future performance. When, like, you paid off that debt, that small debt, but you said then the game got easier. Then I got much better at it. Was it, I mean, did your fortune change or did you have a different perspective and a different outlook? And did you approach it differently? Like, why did you get better as a result of that 1.5 or 2 months on the farm?
Well, that's a great question. And I like to explain it this way. It also delves into why I'm a poker brat, why I'm emotional, too emotional at the table. So I told you earlier that I'm the oldest of five, and I was the only kid, because of the ADD or whatever, who just didn't get grades that cut it for my dad, right? And all my brothers and sisters played instruments. They were all good at sports. So four younger brothers and sisters killing it at sports, killing it in instruments, killing it in grades. And so, you know, this was a real self-esteem issue for me because my father poured a lot of importance onto getting good grades. And I wasn't doing that. And I wasn't great in sports. I didn't grow till I was in freshman year in high school. And I didn't play any instruments. And so I felt worthless by so many measures. And at least at that point in my life, I kept away from becoming, you know, drinking heavily and drugs and kind of going a different path. I at least kind of stayed in there. Which I give myself some credit for, but but it also then made me not lose at any games. I had a competitive advantage. So if I couldn't get the good grades, if I couldn't be good at sports, if I couldn't play instruments, I could crush my brothers and sisters at every game we played. Hearts, spades, backgammon, Monopoly, any game we played, I became a master. And so from an early age, I was seeking out strategies. And so when poker fell into my life, you know, that's what I'd been used to, is that's what I was great at in my family. And when I did lose, imagine when I'd finally lose to one of my younger brothers and sisters, I'd have a tantrum. And, you know, and maybe it wasn't pretty. And a lot of people said they wish those tantrums were taped. They would watch them. But I would just kind of go off. Oh, my God, you rolled double sixes and double fives to beat me. And I'd kind of just be steaming just like I am in the poker world. And so that lack of self-esteem and losing at games carried over for many years. Even to this day, I'm probably a really bad loser. And so, you know, and so I think that's what was going on, is this ability to learn games. And so immediately in poker, I immediately won a bunch of money. Then I paid so it went like this. I won a bunch of money and then I paid my tuition for the semester. And then I had to drop out anyway because I owed someone, I believe it was $100, and they took my driver's license. So I went to work for Blaine Farms. And then when I paid the guy the $100 back, I'd been at that time thinking a lot about poker. And I started playing again and I started crushing it. And maybe I worked at Blaine Farms for 6 weeks. I'd be thinking, all right, I'm making whatever, $5 an hour. But I'd say, hey, guys, I won $120 last night. I'm not sure they believed me. $120 doesn't seem like a paltry amount today. and I'd be like, oh, I want 190. And so I started then building my bankroll, you know, and then found the bigger feeder games in the city and then found the feeder games in the state. And, you know, all those trips to Vegas where I lost, you know, led me to other people from Wisconsin that played. And it just turned out that I had a better strategy than they did. And I kept refining it. And, you know, I can tell you the moment that I decided, you know, that I was going to be great at poker. I can get to that story if you want to in a minute.
Tell me. Got to have that right now. How and when did you know?
Yeah. So after all that, after sizing up the players in Vegas, a lot of those trips, I was losing money playing casino games, but I was like, oh my God, these guys are not better than I am, you know, and I could see it. And some people are delusional, but I could see, wow, I'm going to be great at this game. And so I remember one specific day where I was, you know, or I was at my apartment in Madison, and by now I had a nice apartment. And so I drove to this poker game, and it was super boring because I had $20,000 in the bank and I'm trying to win $200, and right away I'm bored. I was restless. And my friends and I are like, hey, I convinced some of the guys to go to the bar or whatever. The golf course was closed and there was a snow on the ground, but it was more like an ice that was on the ground. You're from LA. You have no idea what that is, but there was an ice on the ground. And so I go to this local bar and we're playing pool for $20 a game, and I'm having a drink and I smoked some pot, and all of a sudden it's this dingy bar. And I'm like, it was like that Talking head song. Well, how did you get here? Many days go by and I'm like, God damn, this is ridiculous. What do you want from your life? Is this where you're going to be in 20 years? And I'm like, get the hell out of here and let's go figure this out. And so I remember pulling the door open to leave, and I had my car with me, but I was smart enough to call a taxi. And I remember opening the door and the sun, and it had been kind of like there'd been no sun all day, and the sun just boom, it hits all the ice from the street and it's in my eyes. It was like this, a moment, kind of a metaphor for what happened next, where boom, the light's on. Then I went back to my house and I started writing madly. I wrote the pyramid of success that I described earlier. I wrote that down. I said, if you're going to do this, you're going to become the best in the world at this. And I started writing all these strategies. I wrote long-term life goals. I wrote short-term life goals. A lot of the stuff, I have a book, Positivity, which Tony Robbins tells people to buy my book, Positivity. It's 8 life tips. And so I'm so honored that as a professional poker player, some Tony Robbins would tell people to buy my book. It's just 8 life tips. But a lot of those life tips came from that day. And I'm like, that's it. No more bullshit. And there was another thing that I wrote down, this pyramid of success that I also talk about in Positivity in my book and my autobiography. You can't do this anymore. All right, we're not going to be playing high stakes blackjack or craps or any of the Vegas games. You know, I'm not a drug guy anyway. We're not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to become an alcoholic, and I have to start exercising and I have to start eating good food. So kind of just it all came together in a chart, and imagine a pyramid where I talk about the stuff I shouldn't do on the bottom and the stuff I should do at the top. And the very top is money management, because no matter how much skill you have in poker, if you manage your money well, you'll have a nice life. And if you don't, you know, so I'd rather, like, life perspective, I'd rather be a guy that has 90% money management and 70% poker skill. Luckily for me, I have, you know, the 100% poker skill, and my management's been pretty good. But anyway, so wrote all that down. It's just this crazy day. You know, I call it the light went on in my book, and it really did go on for me. And then it was about a year and a half later that I won the main event, which was a lifetime goal by then. And my father flew out to watch me win it, and he never bothered me again. And so everything kind of came together. And then all of a sudden I had all this money. And like I said previously, I had the Porsche and the Cadillac and the condo, and then I somehow got myself short, but that was okay. You know, I mean, a lot of people would have had to sell the condo, sell their cars. And I just kind of hung in there tough. And I played the small stakes games to grind through. I drove to Escanaba, Michigan, which is further than Manaquin, further than your place in Eagle River. It's a 3.5 hour drive. And I played there, you know, 3 days in a row every weekend to win my $2,000 or $3,000. And I put in the time and the effort to make this work. That's kind of the light goes on moment for me.
So quick question. Why is Old Trapper Beef Jerky so amazing? Let's start with the fact that it is a family-run business. A family business which stands by quality and produces the world's best beef jerky. Now, I've made this point many, many times, and I want to make it again right now. Beef jerky is not just beef jerky. I think some of you go to the store, and you reach for the beef jerky, and you think it's all the same. In fact, you might not even know what you're buying. That's a big mistake. Stop making that mistake. All beef jerky is not the same. In fact, there's nothing like Old Trapper. It is simply the best. 4 mouthwatering flavors, so you can get your choice of whatever you want. Myself, I like them all the same. I bounce back and forth between each and every one of them. So you can do the same thing. They come in 4-ounce bags. If you need to learn, do it that way. If you already know what you want, go with the 18-ouncer. That way there's enough for everybody. The entire unit, the entire family, the entire team. If you do not see it, ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? Phil, are you sure that that night that you were in that bar shooting pool for $20 a game and then you came out and the light was reflecting off the ice that you maybe didn't drop acid as opposed to smoking a blunt or something? I mean, that's incredible. Never mind this incremental improvement on a daily basis. Like, you flipped your entire life on its head and developed a life philosophy like in one day. It's amazing to me. I want to ask you about this, though. Going back to this whole thing about you being the poker brat, I think there's something really analogous, actually, to my career and my situation. Like, you got early on, like, he's the poker brat. He's the American poker brat. And you're like, well, wait a minute. I'm not a bad guy. In fact, I'm a pretty fucking good guy. I'm not the guy doing all this shit. I'm a good guy. Yeah, I might get a little emotional. Maybe I didn't take that bad beat so well. But why am I designated the brat? It's kind of like when Everett and I had our incident, all of a sudden I was that guy and people were saying, yeah, but that's good. That's good. I'm like, no. That was a bad thing for me. And I had a bad day at work and I own it. And that was my fault. But I do not want to be known for that. I want to be known for somebody who's a good guy, who works very hard, who cares about their craft. Was there any part of you that felt that way, that I'm not the brat? I'm doing this the right way. I'm actually a good guy and y'all got it all backwards.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very analogous, your situation and my situation. You know, I think that, yeah, you can be a little bit emotional, a little, in the past, especially, you get a little bit emotional, a little bit mouthy, argue with somebody, and people would be like, well, I don't know about that guy. Similar with me, except I'm worse in a lot of ways, where, because, like, I'm losing, and I'm telling an amateur, oh my God, how could you do that? So, I mean, the genesis of this is, for me, is like, hey, listen, I played poker 3 days to make this final table. They didn't show the first 2 days. All they're showing is the final table. And I'm trying to make history. I'm trying to become the greatest poker player of all time. Now I have 16 world championships. The next 3 great players have 10. I'm way in the lead. And so, you know, now I'm there, right? And so now it's a matter of holding it, right? And I just had, you know, 6 months ago, I had one of the best, maybe the best World Series in the history of the game. So I'm still at the top today. And so that's kind of nice because I see people that, you know, I'm 57. I see people that get to the top and then they're just legends. Well, that's great, but I want to be the number one guy in the world today. And I just showed everybody over the last 8 months, I'm still there. That's too much bragging. So let's cut back to your point. I knew right away when they turned me into the bad boy of poker, I said, all right, that's going to last for 2 or 3 years. So imagine that happened in 02, 03, 04. I said, by the time 05 comes or 06 comes, everyone's going to know I'm the good guy of poker. Never cheated on his wife, you know. And so eventually what happened is the public thought I was an asshole. And then all of a sudden, but everyone in the poker world defended me. So, Jim, I'd have these I'd have all the other champions coming up to me and saying, fuck you, Phil, you know, and laughing. Every time I tell people I'm a poker player, they ask about you. And I heard this from every player, and everyone defended me and said, Phil's a really nice guy. He's a great guy, in fact. And so I had the whole poker world telling everybody I'm a great guy, but the people that watch me blow up still think I'm an asshole. And that's the majority of the world. And so, you know, in my case, I hope that people have finally come around and realized that I'm a good guy. And I know, you know, for you personally in your situation, I think as time passes and people kind of unfold the personality, kind of unfurl who we are, then they're like, oh yeah, yeah. And you know, the advantage, Jim, is this, all the haters I had are now like, oh my God, I love Phil. So they convert eventually, right? All the guys that hated me and had strong negative emotions seem to love me. And so I have a lot of rabid fans.
Oh, I know. I get it. Because what happens is all of a sudden we're not the angry young guys on the way up. We become like the OGs, you know, when they find out. And plus people who know. Let me ask you this. Well, you said something recently, or just said something, Phil, I should say. It's really interesting. You said, I'm coming off this run where, like, I'm not only the GOAT, but I'm still the best at doing what I do right now and today. So I want to ask him, because I'm 57 as well, and I'm doing a lot of kind of a self-exploring, and I'm trying to look within. I want to make sure that I'm still sharp, and I'm still relevant, and I'm still competitive, and people still care what I have to say, and I don't age out. I don't want to become a dinosaur. I don't want somebody to run me down from behind. Like, that shit matters to me a lot, and I can tell it matters to you as well. But in what I do, I'm trying to reinvent and transform myself. Do you have any of that, or do you feel like my system and my process are timeless? I don't need to fix what ain't broke. I don't need to innovate this part of my portfolio. In other words, how do you approach that part of it?
Well, first of all, you're doing a great interview today. And I don't just say that because I get interviewed, you know, 100 times a year, 200 times a year. I'm on the cover of Cigar Aficionado, by the way. Woohoo! You're doing a great job. I can see the insightfulness, and the question's great too. And it's interesting to me. I'm going to cut away to something I remember a few months ago where I thought, well, Al Michaels is killing it still. This guy's in his 80s. He's killing it. And then, you know, my friends, Joe Lacob owns the Warriors, and he's given me floor seats whenever I've asked for 12 years. And so I sit with him, but I always bring somebody interesting with me. I'll bring, you know, celebrities, athletes, you know, and so I'm sitting there and there's Al Michaels. And I'm like, oh my God. And in person, you know, he looks older. He looks like maybe, you know, he might be 80 or whatever. And I just thought to myself, it really doesn't matter. You know, you look into Hubie Brown. Hubie Brown is 85. He's still killing it on the broadcast. I love listening to his knowledge and the way he breaks things down.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe, and then one more for you is Doyle Brunson, you know, who's now 85 and continued to win every single month of his life up until his 80s, win money at poker. So I think that you and I are lucky in our professions that we continue to kill it until our 80s. And there's examples for you and I that say we can keep going and going and crushing and crushing. I remember Doyle just being a huge force, still in his 70s, and playing in the biggest games in the world all the way until his 80s. And then one other thing to come back to the innovate part, you do have to pay attention to what's coming up. So I'm sure in my case, I'm watching what the younger champions are doing. And in your case, you're watching what the compelling broadcasters are doing. You probably look at Bill Burr a little bit, although he's a little bit outside of your scope, or whoever. There's some really, I don't know, who would you look at now, one of the young guys who you'd be like, hey, I kind of like his style.
And now a message from Discover about rewards. If you are a loyal credit card customer, you should be rewarded for your loyalty, preferably with something that is useful, you know, like cash back match. Discover matches all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year. Finally, rewards that make sense. Discover exceptionally common sense. Learn more at discover.com/match. Limitations do apply. You know, for what we do, like Pat McAfee is like a really good guy and a former athlete. But you know what it is also? It's not so much the guys and what they're doing, Phil. It's now the platforms. It's now the platforms, because it used to be like so brick and mortar where I would come in, I do my radio program, then I do a TV show for ESPN or for Fox. But there are so many different social media platforms and ways that people access their information and their content and their media. So I personally need to do a better job of pushing out content and finding ways to get it to people, and especially younger people who have a much shorter attention span, you know? So it's more than just the compelling personalities, but rather how they get their information and how we push it out and how we disseminate it.
For you, I look at my friend David Sachs, who's the All In podcast, and these guys are killing it now. They had an All In summit. And I look at my friend Draymond Green, who's filmed on my TV shows, and we've gone to Cabo and hung out together. And Draymond's a good friend of mine. He's killing it. And I like the way he's putting clips up. David Sachs, the same thing. They're putting these 1 minute clips up on their Twitter with very interesting stuff.
That's it.
But anyway, just a thought that I had. And at some point, I have to sell something. So can we talk about equity.com just for a quick second?
Yes, we certainly can. I was going to get to that. And I love that you and Draymond are tight and that you're so good with the Warriors. Now, the thing is, for all the success you
Draymond
have—
Draymond is the best poker player in the NBA, right?
For real.
Westbrook's really good, too. But Draymond, I've worked with, through the pandemic, we played, six times a week. And I was always texting him, you can do this better, that better. And so Draymond, I've coached up to be, but he's also a brilliant strategist. And you see it on the basketball court. And, that guy, Draymond Green, is going to be a billionaire for sure. He's already doing, and he's hanging out with my super group of guys in Palo Alto, a bunch of billionaires. And these guys all have VC firms. And Draymond is, but the nice thing, he's going to be able to write his ticket, because he could obviously work like inside the NBA. He's doing his own podcast now, but I'm really impressed with Day-Day.
No, I'm not in any way surprised to hear you say that he's the best poker player in the NBA, because he's playing poker on the floor. You can see the way his mind works. And
floor general.
I mean, he is so quick in the way he processes everything. You can see it. All right, so as I was going to say, you are involved in so many different companies, either as an owner and or investor. Equi.com, right? What is that?
Yeah, it's Equi. That's EQUI.com. It's amazing to me that I'm on 15 advisory boards, because I think if you can be good at poker— I theorized this for a long time. If you can be great at poker, you should be able to be great at life, and you should be able to be great at business. So I'm on 15 advisory boards. We did three SPACs last year, where we took three companies public, and it's just been a lot of fun for me to be involved in all of these deals. I'm even starting my own VC fund right now, and so that's been a lot of fun. But Equi is one that we're spotlighting today. It's been fun because these guys managed to basically their growth fund at Equi is now rated 99th percentile, 99 out of 100. And because somehow they didn't lose money since November, it's amazing what they've done. It's also, if you're going to go to equi.com, I think the minimum you have to invest is hundreds of thousands of dollars, but it's set up for some high net worth people to have access to deals they couldn't otherwise get. And so these are three super sharp kids, and they're just killing it. They're getting, so they're going to have, you can invest in real estate funds there. All the stuff you can't get to if you're worth 5 or 10 million, you can invest in there. And it's a nice platform, so you can, check your, but you can't do it on an iPhone. I think it's only on a computer. And it's been a pleasure to be a part of it and watch these guys crush. And they're raising at $150 million already, because they're managing so much money and they're just crushing it. And I think when you become a one percentile, the top one percentile fund, that spreads itself, especially now, because I don't know about you, Jim, but I've lost, 50% of my money that I've invested myself in the stock market, millions of dollars. And so, my money with them is doing well though. And, but it really points me, and probably points you, towards I need professionals to manage all of it. And Equi.com is a great place to do that.
You know, why would we think that we can do that when that's not what we do, that's not where we live, and we're going up against the very best who do it? So I agree with you. It's Equi, right? EQUI.com, Phil. Equi.com.
Did you get killed in the market too?
Of course. Absolutely. 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 I do even
better. I thought I was pretty smart.
Yeah, I did too when I bought my first Bitcoin. Where do you come out on crypto?
Yeah, I like crypto. You know, I'm involved with the Bitcoin Latinum, which is relaunching right now. So we'll see. I'm hoping that project ends up being good. I like the way they think Bitcoin Latinum. They want you to be able to buy Bitcoin Latinum and use it to buy a Starbucks where the transaction fee is one penny, not $10. They want speed of transactions. Sometimes if you buy or sell Bitcoin, it takes 24 or 36 hours. So they want it to go quickly. And they're also a green coin. So when they relaunch, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
No one close to you should have to endure the dreaded knock on the door. The knock that comes from a police officer who must tell your loved ones that you were killed in a car crash. It's a message that gets even worse when they learn that your death may have been prevented if you had only been wearing a seatbelt. The simple fact is, regardless of what type of vehicle you ride in, seatbelt use is the single most effective way to stay alive in a crash. That's why the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is spreading the word. We want to raise the profile of seatbelt safety so we can save lives. So whether you're going on a cross-country trip or just right up the street, please buckle up. Don't risk it. And remember, click it or ticket. Brought to you by NHTSA. All right, so Phil, one last thought. I want to ask you about this. You mentioned being on the cover of Cigar Aficionado. That's got to be a thrill. And speaking of family,
it's just coming out right now, Jim.
Okay, well, there you go. I was in it once. I was not on the cover, but I was in it, and I thought it was an absolute thrill. I love it. So I know what you're talking about, and you got the cover. Now, you took your two sons out to Nobu to celebrate your high-stakes dual win and the fact that you made the cover, and you said the three of you sat around a fire pit. You had drinks. You smoked cigars. You had deep conversations until about 2 o'clock in the morning. As a father, I know this. It does not get much better than that. I've always said, Phil, I can't wait for my boys, for them to be old enough for us to have a pop or two with the old man. How much fun? Leave me with that thought. How much fun was that for you the other night, and how much did that mean to you?
Oh, it was everything, and I've already talked about it in two tweets. You know, my boys are 31 and 28, and one of them dropped out of college with, you know, a semester to go and said, hey, I'm going to go work in a movie theater. But he's smarter than I am, EQ and IQ wise. And I'm like, okay, great. I'll support that. And never batted an eye. And you know, his goal is to become radically authentic, which I think is amazing. He's so smart. And the other one, the older one, Philip, and the younger one is Nick, is working for a bank right now and is managing a ton of branches. And he's more traditionally, he just bought a house in Palo Alto. And I'm just so proud of both of my boys. And I have so much love for them. For my two sons, and my wife wasn't feeling great. So it was guys' night, and they both had girlfriends for 6.5 years. And so for me to have Nobu with them and to be able to spend a lot of money on some really good food for them, and then to go back to our house, and we had Pappy Van Winkle, you know, and smoke the best cigars, and to just talk about our lives and our relationships, you know, with my wife and their relationships with their girlfriends. It's just incredible. And you just leave. I'm so happy because they both live a mile away, and a lot of fathers and sons don't make it. And so it's just amazing to me. And and it's just so meaningful to me. I mean, thank you for spotlighting that. How old are your kids?
No, I get that. So my son at Wisconsin is 21, and our younger son, that's Jake. Our younger son, Logan, is 17. So he's a junior in high school. And I can remember, you know, like for years and years, my routine.
The 17 still hates you right now. 17-year-old hates you, and the 21-year-old is.
He doesn't hate me. I think that he hates that I kind of grind and I'm on him. But no, that he doesn't hate me. I hate that he's kind of a shortcut kid. You know what I mean? Like, he's very smart, very talented. But if there's a hack or a shortcut or it involves work like closing your drawers and picking your clothes up and turning your lights off and, I don't know, being responsible. He hates that I hate that. But you know how it is.
They don't actually hate you, but it's amazing how much they, at least for my sons, it's amazing how much they didn't want to have anything to do with me, you know, when they were in high school. They were both into my wife more than me until they were about 23. So I had to wait 23 years.
That's interesting. Because my younger son was all about mom. And everybody would say to me, it's going to flip. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so, man. It hasn't yet. And then it's 50. And then the younger one I used to play this game with, mama or dada. And he knew even at an early age how to be political. He'd say mama and dada. Like, he figured that shit out at four, you know. But the one thing I will say, I don't know about your routine, Phil, but my routine always was work as hard as I possibly could, Sunday to Thursday, grind out, never drink during the week. But by Friday night, I was going to get mine, and I wasn't going to even fuck around with it. Like, I straight up Bombay Sapphire, straight up. I didn't mix it. I wanted to get to where I wanted to get fast. And the kids grew up watching that, and they knew Dad was, I was one of those guys that I was more fun and more laid back and, you know, more relaxed after I had one or two of those. And I can remember thinking to myself, man, I cannot wait for these kids to get old enough where we can all share this together. So that's why I had to ask you about that, because you get to share that together.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can do it around a fire pit, even better. And if you get quality conversation with the best food and the best drink, how do you beat that? You can't beat that.
And I remember looking, and it was like 2:06 a.m. And they were still happy. And I'm like, well, probably the oldest needs to get some sleep by now. It was just great. Yeah. I mean, it's just that's what you hope for, right? You hope for a great relationship with your children. And so, I mean, they're still into mom, but at least I had them for a few years there. So, you know, and now it's more equal if they've gotten older. So.
I get it. It evens out. Phil, like I said, how you and I got this far down in our respective lives and careers without doing this, I have no idea. But I'm so glad that we finally got around to it. Let's not wait another 30 years to do it. It was so good to have this conversation. And I really appreciate you making all this time. And good luck with everything, including the new company you're working with, Equi.com.
Jim, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this. It was a great interview, so I appreciate it. It was nice, and I really appreciate the fact that you went to the family first theme at the end. Thank you.
So let's be real. Part of me wants to say that conversation blew me away, but the fact is it really didn't. I'm not shocked to find out that poker's bad boy is actually extremely fascinating and very likable. Not surprised at all. I'm not saying that his blowups are an act. They're not. They're real. But most of all, he's real. And you gotta love his story. Grinding it out in Madtown, the light turns on, dude flies up the poker ladder, and he's still on top even today, 3 decades later. Honestly, this guy could have spent a half hour at a table somewhere raking in chips from some starstruck fish, but instead, this shark made some time and he showed up huge for the original Side Hustle. So thanks again to Phil for an incredible chat. I loved it, every second of it. Conversations like that are exactly why this podcast exists in the first place. So if you enjoyed this one, just know there are over 220 just like it already in the bank. It's premium, it's unfiltered, and most importantly, it is free. Free content, and we're pumping it out every single week. So if you take a second right now to subscribe, that'd be great. That way you never have to worry about tracking down another app. They will find you instead. So if you would, hit us with a sub, and while you do that, I will hit you with your voicemails.
First new message.
No, you didn't rock me. No, you didn't. Oh, which I got to admit is, especially with hindsight being 50-50 and all, totally get it, totally understand, but, you know, I'll keep trying to hone my craft or whatnot down here in the minor leagues. So, just going to keep trying harder, you know. Yep.
Message deleted. Next message.
Hey, Rome. Hey, what up? Your boy Matt in LA. Man, the guy in Reno, that goofy fuck that called with that parody of Don't You Want Me Baby, dude, that was terrible. I mean, seriously, Buffalo Bill from freaking Silence of the Lambs thinks you need to get a hold of yourself, bro. That was cringeworthy times a thousand. Feel free to never call the jungle again, you puke, because that didn't make it better one fucking bit.
Message saved. Next message.
Romy, Justin in Melbourne, man. What's up with that dipshit David in Buffalo? I mean, 4 sports takes on the pod? How many times is this dipshit call with sports takes, Dave? I mean, it's the podcast, man. Have some range, will ya? How about a little show fodder? How about some bum smack? Save that bull crap for your local sports radio. That's not what the jungle wants.
Message saved. Next message.
Hey, Jim, what's up? This is David from Buffalo. I'm calling in about Otis and Austin trying to get back in the smack off. Otis, nobody understands your calls. Nobody understood them back in the day. But now if you're just going to come in and be like, you know, just say war this and war that, Otis, it's the smack off, dude. This is not a local show where you call up and say, hey, I met Vince Young down at the strip club. And, man, we talked about how he used to run the football. I mean, Otis, this is a national sports talk show. You're going up against heavyweights like the Cablin Asian, IF Brady, JT the Brick, Brad and Corona. I mean, you're standing in the middle of the ring with the best in the world, bro. I mean, Otis, you are going up against the premier callers in the industry, bro. Guys that are legends, guys that are made men. Otis, you can't come in and do that, bro. If you're going to come back, dude, you better reinvent yourself, because you know what? Jeff and Richmond think your act is stale.
Message deleted. Next message.
Jimmy, what's up? It's Dr. Dave. Kind of weird getting home from work.
Just picked up hearing Jimmy. Fuck it, hey. Oh, well. I'm typical Dr. Dave right here with my shitty-ass message. Whatever, whatever, whatever. I need to go get some tequila and just go drink myself to sleep tonight.
Message deleted. Next message.
Hey, Jim. Rob from Reno. Thanks for the at-bat on Friday. You know, even though I swung and missed, it was awesome to be at the big show. Even if I was nervous as a rabbit in an open field full of predators, I appreciated the opportunity. But now I go back to the minors for a second, where dreams are reality and reality are dreams. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on.
Message deleted. You have no more messages.